listening to Around Comics. Episode 426, the greatest podcast in the known universe. We talk comics, we talk movies, we talk baseball, we talk curling from time to time, even Russian literature from time to time on this podcast. Welcome, my friends, to another amazing, awesome, gregarious, outrageous,
gregarious,
ridiculous episode of Around Comics. Sorry, I'm pumped up. I just got done watching a GWAR documentary.
Oh, Jesus.
So GWAR!
I'm very excited. I'm very energized by GWAR.
These guys are like in their 60s now.
They're my age, so we're not in their 60s yet. Those of them that are alive are probably in their, definitely 40s and 50s. Yeah. I didn't know much about GWAR. I was telling Tom, I didn't know much about GWAR until watching this documentary, even though I've seen them two times.
Yeah. And they've just kind of always been there.
Yeah, it was an interesting documentary, though. I have more respect for GWAR now after watching it than I did in the past.
Spewing that much fake blood for that long on stage. I mean, there's a level of dedication that a lot of people don't have.
Absolutely, yeah. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi.
Happy Thursday. Happy Thor's Day. Happy Around Comics Day.
Yeah. Sorry, I was watching. Just finished watching the season finale of the January 6th hearings. Cannot wait for season two. Mm.
What a waste of time. Anyway.
How are you guys doing?
Not by just you, but by the entire process.
Yeah, are we going to jump in, just talk comics, and just go for it? No.
Too late for that.
It's up to you. I mean, I guess you jump in, you start, you do it.
Let's do it. I'm ready to talk comics.
Do it. You do it. Do it.
DC versus vampires.
Do it. Wait, I don't time.
Know, I don't know why I do this to myself. I think I crossed the. You remember with like Marvel Zombies when you're like, okay, my Marvel Zombies cup runneth over. I think I've read enough. No. I'm getting really close to that with DC versus vampires. That being said, I didn't hate issue one of DC versus vampires all out war.
It's war this time, vampires.
Yeah. This time it's for real.
No fucking around.
Well, you know, my whole fucking problem with this series is that we're now,
you love vampires.
We have like three mini series that all take place after the conclusion of the first mini series, which isn't done yet.
You know, I'm gonna call bullshit on that because
man,
reading this issue has nothing to do with that. You don't
it
need
gives
to read
a, it gives away who the big bad is
in this issue. But you didn't know that going
into it. No, this takes place at, but it still takes place after the events of the first series.
Yeah, whatever. You didn't need to read this issue.
Huh?
You wanted to read it, Chris. Don't lie.
You know, it is really pretty. It is really pretty. And you get a Bane and Vigilante. And what I realized is I can now not see Vigilante on the comic page without his dialogue being in the voice of the guy from Peacemaker.
The sort of nerdy, wannabe, psychotic serial killer Vigilante.
That is Vigilante's voice now.
That's okay. I have that too. I have that happen to me too with various characters and movies and TV shows that are in comics.
Robot Man sounds like Brandon Fraser.
Yeah, he does.
That's what he sounds like, you know? Like, if Robot Man's in a comic, that's the voice in my head that I hear you. Like, that's what it is now.
What other, I mean, I definitely, Batman is like Kevin Connolly voice for the most part.
Oh yeah.
I think I hear his voice, or just that deep Batman kind of, you know what I mean? Like, that's the voice I hear whenever I read a Batman comic for the most part. What other characters? Are there other characters that
there do was that? It'd be funny. It'd be funny if you only heard Adam West.
It's like, hey, chum.
It's like, hey, Batman. Year, even if it's like Batman Year One, still Adam West's voice.
Probably Deadpool and Ryan Reynolds at this point.
That's, yeah, that's maybe if voice, I read any Deadpool comics, but I don't read any Deadpool comics. So
Deadpool almost in the comics talks so much that I don't even imagine a voice. There's so much text.
Words.
Yeah, it's like, oh my god, there's so much talking happening. I can barely. To be honest, like all the Doom Patrol characters now, I just hear the Doom Patrol like TV show.
Yeah, I'm almost caught up. We'll talk about it on ACTV this week, but yeah, I had a whole season to catch up on. It's still
the Chief sounds like Timothy Dalton.
Yep.
Oh, it's just like.
Oh yeah, there's a few. I can't think of it off the top of my head. There's something. I don't know what it was. I was reading. It might have been The Boys. Like I was reading when they came out with The Boys.
Oh, that Butcher.
Butcher, but there seemed like there was another one. There was another. I don't know what it is, but now whenever I read it, I definitely absolutely hear the voice, and I can't think of what one it is, but it's definitely there for some of them. That's kind of interesting. It's an interesting. I mean, you're making up a voice in your head to go with something you're reading that someone made up. It matches now something you watched.
It's like Thor. Is Thor Chris Hemsworth's voice at this point?
I don't think so.
Maybe no.
I don't hear it. I don't. Yeah. I mean, too Australian.
Okay.
Besides, Thor is a woman now. So, if you didn't get the memo, Chris.
I had assumed.
Yeah, I guess I don't ever think of like Iron Man as Robert Downey Jr. in a weird, even though Robert Downey Jr. is a very distinctive, you know, he likes to Robert Downey Jr. his way around.
Does it have something to do with your ability to mimic them though? You know what I mean? Like, can you do an impression of Robert Downey Jr.? Why?
Here's the thing, Sal. Is that none of us are good at impressions, and two of us understand that.
Listen, I have fun regardless. One of us has fun and doesn't let
joy is. Maybe it's about how they're written too. You know, like you can't
two of you don't have the balls to try impressions.
I don't know. You do a good Elvis.
I don't know what I would do for Robert Downey Jr. impersonation. But maybe part of it's like how they're written too, you know, it's like sometimes a voice is like not just the words, but like the way they talk about stuff, you know, like I can kind of imagine Brendan Fraser's voice, like Robot Man kind of saying whatever with that type of voice, you know, like where Robert Downey Jr. has like a really particular like rhythm and way of talking that like, I don't know if a comic book ever. You know, like it's kind of like what we were saying with Deadpool. Like Deadpool, I almost can't put a voice to it because there's like so much talking. There's like characters like talking all the time. You know,
I don't know the actor's name, but the guy who played Arnim Zola. I always hear his voice now.
Yeah, and that guy's a character actor. Right? You know, you've seen in other things.
You can kind of just put that voice over. You know, who's ever writing it? It's not like you're like, yeah, that doesn't quite sound like. Nope. Something this person would say.
It works.
I'm trying to get the most obscure character that I could be like, that's what this guy said. When I
Korg from the MCU. They're going to be minor.
Jared Leto. Jared Leto's the voice of the Joker for me.
Really?
No. No. I'm kidding.
Did he even talk in that movie? I don't even.
It's Cesar Romero. That is the only Joker.
You could make a case, but I'll go with Mark Hamill.
See, I never liked Mark Hamill as a Joker.
Really?
He is the Joker. Because I always knew Because I always knew it was Mark Hamill doing a voice, and I just don't, I don't hear him as the Joker when I,
yeah, that is the Joker to me.
No. I don't know who, I don't know that I have a voice in my head of who the Joker is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not Ledger. It's that, that's so just, you know, his movie.
It's the former British Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher. Margaret Thatcher, that's who I hear.
It's who did like Super Friends Joker, to be honest. Like,
you're probably right.
Like, that's the Joker in my head. Is like the
Well, it's good. It's good that none of us had a ready made answer. It's like, oh yeah, the Joker sounds just like my dad.
Yeah, Solomon Grundy sounds like
that would be a little weird.
It's like, oh, yeah. So anyway, you know, DC versus vampires, it still remains fun. I feel it's, I don't know why I feel like it's a guilty pleasure. I'm guilty that it's a guilty pleasure.
It's comic
books, but I still
you shouldn't be reading any of them. You're an adult,
right?
What are you doing?
Right. Yeah. It,
for the price that there is, like, come on, they're all a guilty pleasure for that much.
Yeah. Yeah, but it still it brings me joy. It's fun. It's fun seeing this like ridiculous no rules world where you can have Deathstroke teaming up with Damage, you know, the Human Bomb and Blue Devil.
How far away do you think you are from being burnt out on DC versus vampires? How many issues away until you're like, eh?
You know what? I'm gonna give it to like Thanksgiving. I think I can get the rest of the year.
I mean, they're probably gonna keep pumping it out, right? Until
I mean, that's like four months. That's like what, like six, maybe seven issues. Yeah.
Who did the art on this? It was interesting because it was kind of like black and white and red only.
Right. It's a Pat. I'm gonna butcher this. Pascal Culano,
if you say so.
And it has this really restricted color palette. It's black, white, and red basically, and it's cool.
It uses Zipatone, he uses gray tones, but only red.
And that's one of the things, is like, these have been fun to read. They're stupid, you know, popcorny, and you know, it's just like this little pocket universe. Still
why
fun.
Must you just diminish the things that you love, Chris?
But the art, and all of them.
Let's get this clear right now. No one thinks you have great taste or that you are sort of tastemaker. It's okay that you like schlock and pop culture crap.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. It is. But the art has not been anything to joke around with. The art and all of them, and it's been several different artists, have been really good.
I like the book too. But I like any superhero stuff that isn't in like the mainstream sort of continuum of most books, because they're kind of boring. And when you can do something that's like completely out of the norm, like this is, you know, an alternate
Marvel story. Zombies. It was schlocky, but you know, that first, you know, the first two or three stories were a lot of fun.
I'm waiting for werewolves to come around. I want like Marvel versus werewolves. Marvel werewolves.
Maybe it's Marvel vampires versus DC werewolves.
DC zombies.
It's the crossover event we've always been, you know, we've been waiting for.
You got to say the DC zombies is clever, at least in the idea that they took sort of the, you know, that was what Marvel fan or Marvel zombies was.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Marvel fans were called for years, Marvel zombies. And then they're like, well,
definitely the tongue in cheek.
It was great.
Yeah.
Clever.
It just happened.
DC is like DC versus vampires. They probably sat around, like, pitched like 8,000 names. And so it was like, just DC versus vampires.
It's so funny because DiDio's not there anymore, but it's such a DiDio like event name, right?
Why are we shitting? Let's not shit on
Dan DiDio.
I think Dan DiDio's
colon all out war dash Young Justice.
I've met very few people in the world that are as excited about fucking comic books as that guy. No, all
props. Long ass names though. Some fucking long.
Was there any name for DC fans? I mean, you had the Marvel Zombies. Was it DC Disciples? Wasn't it or something like that? Or is that too gang related?
I don't know.
DC Demons. DC could have been DC Demons. Crips.
Were they Bullet Heads or something like that? I don't know.
DC not, Dork.
I mean, Marvel Zombies are Marvel Zombies. I don't.
DC Virgins.
But DC.
Basement Dwelling Virgins.
Marvel fans? Fuck. Let's be
We read the dark comics.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
It's like, oh, these heroes are flawed.
Yeah.
It's like,
hey, baby, do you know who Wolverine is? That always got
He's him. A 5 foot. 3 inch tall Canadian
cigar smoking Canadian covered Canadian. In hair.
Yeah.
Every woman's dream.
Yeah. Every woman loves him. He's complicated.
That was the thing.
Mostly like, depressed most of the time.
Psychotic, depressed. Psychotic. He goes into fits of anger.
Yeah.
He drinks often.
I mean, speaking of like, you know, reading things, the guilty pleasure. How many Wolverine comics do you think you have read in your life, or comics that have Wolverine in them?
Uncountable.
3, 4.
Thousand.
A thousand.
Yeah, I don't
Wolverine.
Know.
Wolverine.
Every one that's ever come out. Literally probably.
Yeah.
Probably 75% of everyone that's come out since I've been alive.
Yeah.
I've probably read, you know, I mean, he was not even trying.
Yeah. There was a time when I think that Wolverine almost became Marvel's Batman. There were a couple Wolverine titles and he was in at least 2 team books, if not 3. I mean, they were putting Wolverine in everything.
Now it's Marvel. She is Marvel's Batman.
Oh, Miss Marvel's in everything.
I don't know. I was just kidding. Who is Marvel's Batman now?
Oh, I think it's. I mean, Spider-Man has always been kind of the flagship character. I think
he wishes he was Batman. Are you kidding me?
Probably.
Who is
that broke-ass kid lives with his aunt? He is no Batman.
It's got to be like a Marvel Cinematic Universe character that they own completely, right? Like. That's the only character that they would ever like dedicate that level of like, we're gonna have 5 books about this, you know, about this character. There isn't one, right? I don't think there is.
At Marvel?
Yeah.
I mean, besides, you know, Spider-Man at like his height, whenever you had Amazing, Spectacular, and Web of, I think, going at the same time. And he was Marvel team up.
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe there isn't one.
I don't think there has to be one.
Doctor Strange.
It depends on what month or what quarter Disney is putting out books. So, you know,
I tell you whose voice quarter. I don't hear when I read the comic. I do not hear Benedict Cumberbatch's voice when I
his lame ass American accent.
That is not the voice I hear.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I do is just as good a British accent as he does American.
I always hear Vincent Price.
For Doctor Strange?
Price?
Yeah, like a young Vincent Price.
What? That's not true. You don't hear Vincent Price, a young Vincent Price in your head when you're reading a Doctor Strange.
Boris Karloff, young Vincent. What the fuck does young Vincent Price sound like?
Not the old one, because Dr.
Like, not the one in the thriller video?
Not the one in the thriller video.
Yes. The one from
but that's
the
what, Pit that's in the Pendulum?
So,
that's just the voice I hear.
It's funny you say that, because similarly, I hear Vincent Price impression by, what's his name, who does Barry on Saturday Night Live. Will Hader, when he did Vincent Price on Saturday Night Live, that's what I hear.
The voice.
That's amazing.
For Doctor Strange.
Yeah. Strange coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hey.
Weird Al.
Speaking of Marvel Zombies.
He was in the Guar video, or Guar documentary.
Oh, Weird Al was? Yeah. Nice. Speaking of Marvel Zombies and just comic book fandom in general, was depicted... Oh, shit. What's the name of it? Rogues Gallery.
Piece of shit.
It was weird, right? It's like, I thought it was, as I'm reading it, it's like, this is fucking terrible. Oh, they're making fun of it being terrible. So that's kind of cool. Now it's actually really not very good. And then they did something interesting. And then the very last page, I was like, nah, I'm out.
Listen, I don't know. It's some actress who is probably trying to produce it to be her own TV show or something, is my guess. She hired like Declan Shelby and a bunch
that
of other.
The other funny thing is that Shelby gets a masthead credit.
Yeah, it's a weird deal. I mean,
he did the cover. He didn't do any of the interiors.
I'm pretty sure the whole thing is just a pitch by the actress, whatever, Hannah Rose, something or another.
Are we back to doing that?
I think absolutely you have people that are creating things specifically to try and get them, you know, made for themselves as properties, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. I think you're seeing that. I don't think you're seeing it a ton, but I think you are definitely seeing that kind of thing. Yeah. I think, you know, you'll see more, you know, you see more and more on the fringes, not, you know, but yeah, I think for sure. I mean, who knows? Maybe she's a long lover of comic books and wanted to, you know, had this story in her heart for a long, long time. It's just, you know, it's possible. Yeah. It's certainly
you missed
possible.
It. Netflix is losing money. You missed out on the Netflix.
The bonanza. The bubbles burst.
You missed the bubbles burst. Netflix isn't just like making whatever. We'll make that. Yeah, sure. Whatever.
Hey, and I know we talked about Dua Powerbomb. Was that last week? And I think you were kind of on the fence with it. I read the second issue. Really good. Give it one more issue if you were on the fence with it.
No!
I really enjoyed it.
I'm going to talk about something I liked.
I was brief. I'm done. Go. Go. I'm done.
Do it. I've read two issues now. Two issues came out. The second one just came out this week. It's called The Lonesome Hunters. Okay. It's by Tyler Crook. It's a Dark Horse comic book. Tyler Crook does the whole thing. He draws it, writes it.
Is he Harrow County?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's a very, it's a very Jeff Lemire-ish, but, you know, painterly. Although
it's a little reminds me of the Goon, Eric Powell, a little bit.
Yeah, it does have a little of that in that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a bunch of I can see a bunch of influences in it, but I really like the style. I think it's I enjoy it more than I like, say, Lemire's storytelling. His art as far as storytelling, or like, you know, but it's just a preference thing, you know, for me. I think it's cleaner to some degree, but it's an interesting story. It's sort of unfolding. It's you know, without trying to give too much away of it, it's basically about a young boy who, and I don't know exactly when the time period is, but long ago, his father was the head of this sort of very religious church group. That were obsessed with sort of banishing pagans. And he thought that his son was sort of the anointed one that was supposed to strike the blow and sort of banish pagans from the world. And so he gives him this very powerful magic sword, and the kid's supposed to like go and strike down these pagans and this demon. And he doesn't, he kind of freezes at the last minute and doesn't do it. And everyone dies around him, and somehow miraculous he is saved by the sword. And then you sort of fast forward to years and years later, and it's like present time, and he's an old man. And he lives alone in this apartment building. And then this girl who lives in the apartment too, weird things start happening, and he kind of gets called back to adventure, or back to this, you know, sort of role, and he gets involved, and it sort of starts to now have a ripple effect about his past, and it's now people are sort of aware that he survived and he's alive, and so it opens up a bunch of Pandora's boxes about, you know, his past. So I don't know exactly where it's going. It's kind of a bit of a mystery and a little bit of a, you know, fairy tale to it, but I really enjoyed it so far. It's weird. It's got some weird magic to it, and I don't really know exactly what is going on, but you don't really need to. It's not, you know, it's not confusing or anything like that. It's a pretty simple, straightforward story, but there's definitely things that, you know, you're going to find out. It keeps you sort of guessing and interested in, like, what is coming up next? What is, you know, what's going to happen to this old man and the young girl that he has saved? So yeah, just a cool, I mean, I think a lot of times we kind of get stuck talking about Marvel and DC stuff, and every once in a while there's, you know, I like to throw something in there that's from another company. So Dark Horse is still making some cool shit.
Dark Horse, baby. Not just Hellboy.
No, they put out some good stuff.
Hellboy is Dark Horse's Batman.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
1,000%.
That'll never change. That should be someone's challenge. Go to Dark Horse and unseat Hellboy as its
sort of flagship. I don't know if that's possible.
Is possible.
They're so joined at the hip at this point.
Just saying.
I bet you walk through Dark Horse's offices, you will see at least 1,000 images of Hellboy. So,
yeah. Anything's possible.
Money. I read The Flash.
Flash.
You haven't talked about The Flash in forever.
It's all right. I mean, mostly the DC stuff is kind of like, right now. Kind of like not necessarily like the most urgent stuff happening. But I read the last couple issues by Jeremy Adams is the writer. And it's funny because I used to work with a guy named Jeremy Adams. Not the same guy, but now he, in my head, when we talk about what the voice of characters are, I just think of the Jeremy I work with is writing these, that I worked with is writing these, even though I know that's not true. In my head,
you imagine him typing.
I imagine him typing these out. And it's good. He's done a really great job of the fact that, like, every two issues, the Flash is dragged into some other shit that's happening. Like, this is like it's a tie-in to the Dark Crisis, right? So they have to they're running off to go find Barry Allen somewhere in the universe, and they all split up and they head to different Earths where they've picked up Barry's signature. And there's one Earth where it's like Mad Max, where Barry Allen is Mad Max, and there's
series of that.
So and the artist really awesome, and it's like one of those books where it would be really easy to be like, there's three different artists drawing these three different Earths, right? Because they do that sometimes, because it makes the most sense to sort of delineate, but one artist drew the three different Earths and
in three different styles.
Yeah, kind of a little bit. Enough that you could tell it was the same, but it was
that's cool.
I'm gonna just murder it. Amanke Naholpan.
I really miss the days where people changed their names.
Right.
I know we're trying to be inclusive and respect everyone's heritage, but I really just miss the days where people were forced
to pronunciation key in the comment. Not a bad idea. But
Ernie Chan, I miss you.
Yeah, it does a great job. You know, you got
Larry Hama.
Earth where Barry Allen is essentially Mad Max, like running from like a bunch of like bad, like Joker-fied, like desert dwellers. You have one Earth where Barry Allen is essentially Batman, but the Flash, So like super fast Batman, and then one Earth where it's like weird Silver Age Earth where like everything's kind of like happy-go-lucky Flash stuff. So like it's it they do a good job of like it's a tie-in to something else that's happening, but it's more of like, well, we'll use that as like inspiration for this story. Like I literally have really no idea what's going on with Dark Crisis, but they lay it out like we got to go
every
find Barry
once
Allen.
In a while you'll get a great tie-in that is able to like skirt around the event but still be technically a
they
tie-in.
Like they delineated exactly what it is that you're doing. Like it's like, oh, they're off to go find Barry Allen. That's what the story is about, because he's off exploring the multiverse. And it was pretty fun. And I, you know, the thing that I appreciate too about Jeremy Adams is that he does a good job of giving Wally like an actual discernible voice of like what his character is like. And like when he interacts with the other characters, like who he is, right? And like why he's the Flash and not, you know, Barry Allen, and why, what makes him different from Barry Allen, what makes him different from Bart, what makes him different from like Kid Flash, and like what could be really complicated to like sort out. He's done a good job of kind of like making Wally like special and like unique, and he's got his own voice and his own way of handling things, and like you're like, oh, okay, I get it. It's like there's a ton of speedsters in this issue. You know, there's Jay Garrick, there's Max Mercury, there's Jesse Quick. There's like a ton of them, but he manages to like keep it all like it's more fun than it is confusing, right? Which is the fine line you have to walk when you bring in like 15 characters. It's like, can I still make this fun without making it like? It's like, oh, cool, those characters there, as opposed to like, why is this character doing this? So, you know, not by no means a earth-shattering issue of a comic book, but it was pretty fun, and he does a really good job of kind of carving out a nice place for the Flash, even though it gets dragged into like every other story that I'm not caring about that often. He still finds a way to keep it centered on the character.
Night Flash.
Yeah, Night Flash. I'm never like, what's happening? Like, what's happening? Why are they doing this? Like, he keeps the story, like, moving along. And it's like, oh, I get it. They're looking for Barry Allen. Like,
wasn't there a story? I always remember, like, hearing tales about that sort of thing. Like, you know, somebody would have, there would, you know, Bendis would have a giant event that everybody had to tie into at Marvel, and some writer, you know, would just kind of be a smart ass about it. But wasn't there like some story of, I can't think of, not Steranko. Who did the death of Captain Marvel and created Starlin? Yeah.
Starlin.
Like Jim Starlin, I think like, I felt like he threatened to kill off the character if they made him write a tie-in to some event or something. Like he's like, okay, I will, but I'm gonna kill off the main character if you make me do that. I feel like there was a story that or something.
Oh, it's, I mean, have you read the Wildcats Alan Moore issues whenever there was that huge crossover event? And it's the most mailed in Alan Moore scripts I've ever read. You could tell you could almost feel how angry he was that they were interrupting his story for this crossover. Yeah,
but that's kind of disappointing. Like Alan, if you're this great of a writer, you should be able to look at that as a challenge. Like I'd rather have someone just be like, okay, like you're saying, like I'm going to write your tie-in, but I'm still going to focus this story on my character, on the book that I'm doing. I'm, you know, and make it as good a story. Like I would think Alan would be able to sort of like go, okay, I'm going to write a story about tie-ins. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and fuck with the whole idea of, you know, tie-in books and that kind of thing or something, you know,
maybe pre-Watchmen he would have done that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. As opposed to later, where it's like, Jesus Christ. Like, yeah, I mean, doing this shit. Yeah. Like, But yeah, so kudos to Jeremy Adams. I don't talk about The Flash often, but I have been reading it. It's good. Of all the in continuity DC books, that's the only one I really continually read, like, and follow along with.
When is Sal? Sal still loves World's Finest, right?
Yeah, World's Finest, I enjoy too.
World's Finest is my favorite. Like, when it comes out, I'm always happy. And an issue came out this week, actually.
I almost think of that one separately, though, too. In a way, it's like it almost doesn't.
At this point, it's an alternate universe. Like that.
It's just like. Yeah.
We've got an Earth B situation going on.
I mean, not really, but it's because the DC universe is so kind of oddly where it's at right now, and Batman and Superman are sort of not the face of DC. It's kind of like this is an alternate, you know, it's a book with Batman and Superman, and they're the leads, and they're the ones that are driving everything forward. And that's an odd thing kind of in DC comics now to some degree, and you know, which is weird, but okay. But that's one of the reasons I love the book is that it's Batman and Superman and it's Mark Waid and he knows how to write those characters so that they both,
and it's also
the Doom Patrol and it's also Supergirl and they're all their own unique characters with their own sort of things going on. But he, you know, like this issue alone, this last issue that came out, which was sort of the culmination of the first arc, the first story arc. And not to spoil it, but there's like a moment where Superman does something very Superman-y, Batman does something then very Batman-y, and together they're able to sort of solve a riddle, a problem, you know, in a very Batman-Superman sort of way that also kind of ties their friendship together and everything. And it's just like perfectly done. It's just like, oh, this is, you know, it's like if you wrote a comic from the 60s, you know, a Brave and the Bold or something where it's like this sort of cheesy story about these two superheroes who are also friends, but then you really did it well where it doesn't seem as cheesy and it's actually just sort of like this really, you know, kind of good comic book story. That's what this is. And the artist, what's his name? Nora. I can't think of his first name. Mark? Nora? Dan Nora? Dan Nora.
Okay.
Is just fucking murdering it. He just kills it. I love his designs for all the characters and the way that he does action, and it's just big and bold and clean. And I love World's Finest. It's my favorite thing. I think it's the only comic book coming out now where I see a new issue comes out and I get like, a little giddy. Yeah. I get a little,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And nice. It's probably the only comic out right now that actually does that to me.
But, yeah. It's great. It's an awesome book.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me want to go back and reread his Brave and the Bold stuff.
Yeah, I for sure.
Well, he did that with Perez. Well, that was Brave and the Bold, right? That he did with Perez. That was fun. That was a fun run that they did.
Did you guys see the Neil Adams tribute that they've put in?
Yeah, I didn't mention that. Yeah,
Tom King wrote it and Josh Adams drew it. It was really a sweet, kind of cool. Different kind of.
It's very thoughtful.
Yeah.
Not that other tributes are not thoughtful, but like, you know, rarely do you see so much space devoted to like all types of creators, like talking about the person and then also giving that person, you know, their own voice of like the way they sort of weaved in things that he said in interviews to like, about creativity and about like, you know, making comics along with like the things the other creator said about him. It was like, oh, it's a very nicely done tribute. Like, gave it like a nice chunk of space to have it done. And then you see like all the creators talking about it and you're like, yeah, that's like everyone, like, all the like most important and influential creators, you know, all having been influenced by Neil Adams in some way, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And it's always a thing, you know, tributes are not an easy thing to do, I think, you know, but it always, in a weird way, so they sometimes come off as sort of self-serving or more about the person talking than about the person it's about. Mm-hmm. And this was a nice way to sort of, like you said, have Neil's voice kind of there as well as the people talking about him. And
But sometimes the
tributes, because that's how Neil would want it.
But sometimes the tributes, and this isn't not the intention of it, but it's like how they can come across, is it almost becomes like the characters they drew are more important than the person. Right? Like it almost becomes like, you know, when I think of like, here's a tribute to this, and it shows a guy over his drafting board surrounded by all the characters. And like, I understand like the sentiment, like it comes from a place of like trying to be,
look what he created. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look what he created. But in and of itself, it can kind of feel like, oh, like that's like, I don't know, like the characters are as important as the person in a way, in a weird way. So I thought this was like an interesting way of not doing that, of not like being like, look at what he created. And like, which is obviously the thing that made him important. Right. But also like you said, like giving the actual person's voice, like agency in the tribute. So I thought it was a really interesting way of doing it.
And Josh Adams is Neil Adams' son. So that's pretty cool.
Oh.
I wasn't sure about that until I just looked it up. So not to pretend like I know something I didn't.
That makes sense.
It is his son, which is also really cool.
It was pretty rad. I was like, that's probably one of the better tributes of.
Yeah. Both companies have done a nice job of memorializing Adams and Perez. Here the last.
Hey, we fucked you over for decades, but here's a couple of pages.
I mean, it was sort of interesting that one of the quotes in the Neil Adams one was from Jeanette Kahn, you know, who was like the publisher of DC, you know, and like essentially about like Neil like fighting for Siegel and Schuster was like a huge thing, like for the
industry. But I don't think I doubt if Jeanette Kahn ever thought that was the wrong thing to do. It was, you know, DC as an entity, as a corporation.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, we've talked about this before, like there's rarely one person who decides these things, but I thought it was interesting that it was like that was part of it too, right? It was not just like the comic creators, was like people who, you know, not necessarily creative, also acknowledged like that this was like what he did was extremely important and like influential.
Not only was he an amazing artist and, you know, he fought for creator rights. But we talked about Neil.
We talked about it,
quite a bit, but I just thought it was pretty cool. I was like, oh, this is, you know, a different take on it. And and then I was like, oh, Tom King wrote it, you know, and that's pretty cool.
Of course. We're going to put a cowbell on you, Tom.
Yeah, he's everywhere. Guy's busy. Busy guy. I used to say Tim Seeley was the hardest working man in comics, but I think Tom King might be the new reigning.
It was easy to understand.
He wrote it for a compact, wide audience.
It was a 9-panel grid, which is the only way Tom seems to write comics any longer. Even a tribute.
It was compact. It was compact. Part two.
He loves that 9-panel grid.
Part two of the tribute comes out 4 months from now.
I'm going to wait for the hardcover edition to read it as a collection.
Yeah, as a collection.
What if Tom just gets hired for all the tributes from now on?
All tributes.
And then comes out with a collected edition.
Tom King's collected
Death Note
tributes.
The tributes of Tom King.
That'd be just one last fuck you to all those creators. We're gonna make money off of your tributes.
Well, it's funny. I mean, there are just like jobs, you know, that that are out there. It's like Jose Luis Garcia Lopez was like the style guide guy for what, 2 decades? What Tom is just the obituary guy.
He's just the obit writer. Tom, we got another obit for you. We're gonna be busy man over the next couple of decades. We got a lot of them dropping off. It's just that time and
bring them in.
We need 3 pages. By Monday, please.
We need them.
Yeah. Like, seriously though, this is probably morbid, but of like the folks right off the top of your head that you can think of that'll get that kind of treatment, be what, like Byrne,
Jesus Christ,
Simonson. You know, it's kind of like
Frank Miller.
Miller.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's plenty more. Arthur Adams.
You think?
He's getting up there.
Yeah. No, I'm just talking about that level of reception and.
Arthur Adams I would think for sure.
That's amazing
Barry Windsor Smith.
Yeah.
Bill Sienkiewicz. We'll get, Steranko.
Yeah. Alan
Mike
Moore,
Norton when we murder him.
Mike Norton. Steranko for sure. Alan Moore.
Alan Moore is not that old though. So.
It'll be a little
but in that class. Yeah. Hopefully we won't have any of those for a while.
I just truly hope that Alan Moore never writes another. I hope the final thing he did in comics was that League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, where he had the letters page making fun of comic fans. This is true. of angry comic book fans.
Well, now he's teaching people how to write comics. He's got a master class out.
Oh, Alan. Nice.
Which I have fought the urge to buy.
Oh, you
every
want
time,
to so bad.
Every time it comes up in my Facebook feed, I've had to fight the urge to purchase it, as I still have.
I like listening to him talk. He's always interesting. He's whatever he's talking about.
Intelligent, well-read. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a very intelligent person. Always enjoy it.
I wish he would write more comics, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's done.
Never say never.
Never know.
Yeah.
I see a Wolverine comic in its future.
You ever write Wolverine? Yeah, I don't think so.
I think Alan Moore should write obituaries whenever.
I bet they would be amazing. But they would be fantastic.
Whenever a DC Comics executive from that era.
he's just like.
This bloody game.
Turns into a Cthulhu story.
Yeah. Always a Cthulhu. Oh, great. It's a Cthulhu story. Oh, Cthulhu.
More
Cthulhu. All these tributes eventually become Cthulhu stories if you go long enough.
I liked his Cthulhu stuff that he was, what was that company in mid-state Illinois that he was?
Providence?
No.
Well, that was the name of the book. The company?
I mean, we've talked about Lovecraft before where I'm like, Cthulhu, interesting idea, a trap for everyone who's writing it. We're just like, oh, fuck. Like,
Avatar Press.
Avatar. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, God, it's a Cthulhu story. Like, here we go. Like, get it out of your system.
You did it good.
Let's get your Cthulhu story out, my friend.
Not a Cthulhu fan any longer. You've had enough Cthulhu?
Bad enough Cthulhu. Great looking character.
Mm-hmm. I think I found a Cthulhu that you could probably be entertained by. I got the pandemic version, the Cthulhu pandemic, the board game.
Oh, okay.
So it's Cthulhu themed instead of virus themed. You're running around stopping out, like Hellmouth and that kind of stuff.
Comic book pitch, Cthulhu, like Lou spelled L-O-U, and it's about like just a normal everyday Cthulhu. Like
that exists.
Does it? Cthulhu?
Yeah, that exists.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
It's literally Cthulhu.
Ah, so that's the same.
That's like, hilarious.
Yeah. I don't know what form. Yeah, that I don't.
Let's look it up.
I think it's a comic, but it might be a Cthulhu.
Yeah, it's what everyday Cthulhu does in his everyday life.
Yeah, something like that. It's Cthulhu.
Taking the kids to soccer practice, that kind of stuff.
I don't know. I don't know if it's a comic or if it's something else. I can't remember.
If not, it should be.
It definitely exists in some form, though.
If that doesn't exist, then we have to make it because that sounds too funny.
I still like Cthulhu stuff when it's sort of tertiary to the, you know, when, like, I mean, Stranger Things, for all we know, is a Cthulhu story.
Oh, it is. That's true. Totally is.
You know what I mean? It's so like Cthulhu as a character, mm-hmm. I don't think was ever interesting, except for the background of, you know, even in the original Cthulhu stuff, it was like the idea of that mythos existed and it created a lot of chaos and madness in the world was what I always found interesting about Cthulhu stories. Not that mm-hmm. character really, like, you know, the god, but
big tentacle face.
Yeah, but I loved, like, you know, someone got a glimpse of that world and was driven insane. I still think that's fucking cool. Like, there's something.
I don't need to be driven insane by the old world. I can just be driven insane by the world I currently live in. I don't need these old gods.
Well, that was it was kind of an analogy, I think. So, although unfortunately it was for racism.
Yes.
In the wrong direction.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems.
But it was an analogy. It was the world was driving him mad because he didn't the fear.
Things are making me crazy. What? And then you're like, oh, okay.
Black people, yeah.
That's like,
Indians, yeah. Oh, well, okay.
Sorry.
Like, listen, I can't choose the fuel that an artist used to burn in their engine. I can't, you know what I mean? I can do is warm my hands on the fire.
I don't point my finger at you. It's one of those things where you're like, okay.
You know, different things drive different artists. It's
sometimes it's eugenics and racism.
Listen, would you rather Hitler would have been a successful painter? Absolutely. I mean, if he would have just got it out in his art.
Yep.
Maybe if he wrote a couple of Cthulhu stories, we would have seen Cthulhu. He could have just sort of, you know, empathized with the. What's his name there? And we wouldn't have had genocide in, you know, the last century, but
invest in the arts.
Invest in the arts. You never know. You could be saving us from genocide. Yeah. Invest in the arts.
Yeah.
Just like, just listen to their Cthulhu story. Just buy their Cthulhu painting.
Yeah, to support.
This is Cthulhu. No, it's great. I love it.
It's true.
I'll take one.
Do more, please.
Do more. Please spend all your time painting.
Yes, all your free time painting, drawing Cthulhu comics. I'd much rather have you doing that than marching on the Capitol.
There needs to be like a federal agency, like pointing people towards, like, you think the modern world is making you crazy? Well, let me introduce you to Cthulhu, an outlet for you to put your.
Have you ever thought of fan fiction? Have you ever considered
writing a Cthulhu story?
We're just gonna start. We have no other solutions at this point
I'm gonna go to one of those artificial intelligence art things where you type in something. I'm gonna say Cthulhu recording YouTube video in truck. So just imagine Cthulhu like in the front of an F-150, like tactical sunglasses.
What's this new Dolly art thing? Have you guys?
Yeah, it's like the artificial intelligence.
Okay, that's what you were talking about, right?
Yeah,
the Dolly project or whatever it is.
Yeah, it really examines and points a very cold finger at the whole bullshit reality of modern art. Like, it makes some cooler shit.
Can you put that in and then share it?
Oh, let's see if I can.
Yeah, like the mini generator is pretty fun. Like, I follow a Twitter account where it's just weird Dolly mini generate. Like, it'll be like General Grievous birthday party, and it'll be like General Grievous with like a birthday hat on, or like.
So it's just going out and grabbing images from the internet and
melds
together basically.
Yeah, you have to get on a waiting list. I haven't actually signed up for it, so.
Oh, really?
You can do the mini one, which is like not as high fidelity. So here, I got it saved because I constantly.
Yeah, I am a middle-aged white man, and I heard about this on NPR, and I was fascinated.
Some of the devs at my work were playing with it, and it was actually pretty fun. We would just give suggestions out, and they would come back and post the images like, wow, that's pretty cool. Like,
nice.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, I'm copying it here.
This thrilling radio. So what do you guys think about the James Webb telescope?
I don't know anything about it.
What?
I think it's not real.
What is it? Tell me. I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, the telescope that is floating out a million miles from here. The first images of the deep range telescope started coming in this week.
Did we see aliens?
No, but I think they saw back about 12 billion years. So they're actually getting close to the Big Bang.
What did they see? Like space?
Stars.
Fucking star?
Stars,
yeah,
and
wow.
Stuff.
Whippy.
Stars whippy and shit. Deal.
All right, so what do we want to do? We want to do
Cthulhu.
Oh, yeah, I can plug it in too. Let me see. Cthulhu. Okay, let me work.
Goggles.
So you guys talk for a second.
Would you say it was Cthulhu goggles?
Cthulhu tactical glasses. Let's try a different one. Sal, let's not even say what we're typing, and let's see what kind of results we get. Like, we know what we're going after. So let's.
I got nothing.
It takes a sec. Cthulhu. I can't spell Cthulhu. Cthulhu. That is not what I expect Cthulhu to be.
Commas?
No. No. It moved. Okay. It can take up to 2 minutes. All right, so let's hang out for a little bit.
We got some time. Mine's working too.
Well, it's a good reminder. If you want to email the show, do so at info@aroundcomics.com. If you want to get a little bit more content like ACTV and Tom Versus, and Tom, I'm going to work on our show a little bit this week, the new one. Chris and Tom talk about an old comic.
Sector Sexuals.
It's going to be great. Sal can't wait to listen.
It was the first comic book I ever masturbated to.
It's the first comic that ever made me cry. Sektar is number 3.
Cannot wait. So, yes, Greg Porter, thank you so much. You are a patron. You can check that out. Patreon.com/aroundcomics. We got, K-Billy Super Sounds. That's not this week. That's 2 weeks, right?
Yes, but next week is Trade Talks.
You got to play the stinger.
Oh, no, because it screws up my audio. And I'm not just for you. You can imagine it. Imagine it in my voice.
Hold on.
In your head.
Hold on. Save it. Okay, that was good. Yeah, it's Grant Morrison's New X-Men, Volume 1.
Yeah!
Frank Quietly.
Let's do it. Let's do it next week. Let's talk.
Yeah, yeah. Remember this, like every other selection that we make for our trade talks, you can get through Hoopla.
I believe it's Extinction is the first trade.
Mm-hmm. I think I have the trade around here somewhere. It's in a box in my basement somewhere.
I have the omnibus. I can see it. I have my little Grant Morrison section of my bookshelf.
Yeah. Do you guys do that at home? Do you organize by author for a lot of stuff?
I don't organize. I mean, I don't organize by very well. I don't. Yeah. I don't like.
Yeah, I mean, it's not strict, but I kind of have things grouped together and like
the way I have my groupings. Brain. Yeah, I have like, groupings of books all over the fucking house.
Like I have all my Alan Moore stuff like in one section, and all my Grant Morrison stuff in one section.
I organize like a psychopath. You want to
just a madman?
So this is the top shelf,
guys. Oh wow, these incredible results. Let me.
Oh wow!
I got some.
I got a Brew Baker Phillips section.
Here, let me see if I can share this.
Mine was pretty weird.
Well, let's see. Share it.
Mine looks like a video game. Oh, it's a different. All right, let me try it again.
Here we go.
You go ahead, Tom. There we go.
Can you see?
Nice.
Cthulhu wearing tactical glasses.
The first column, the one in the middle, is awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So imagine that inside, like a F-150, like recording into his phone. That's a pretty good.
I want
that's
that. What,
this is
avatar.
That one's one of the best ones I've ever gotten, actually. Where I'm like, oh damn, that looks like right on the nose.
Yeah,
Hulu wearing tactical sunglasses.
That's awesome. What did you get, Sal?
I'm redoing it because it didn't make any there was nothing really
sometimes you gotta play with like what you put in. You're like, oh, I get it misunderstood. It like made it all about the glasses and wasn't like
here we go,
glasses.
All right, so let's see, share my screen. How do I do my screen?
I don't know where my tactical glasses are.
Here's mine. That's, so I didn't have any glasses. Mine didn't come. It was just like Cthulhu monsters. And then there's some odd like video game looking.
What'd you put in?
I put Cthulhu Tactical Conspiracy.
Oh, okay. I'm putting in Cthulhu January 6th.
I did do Trump Cthulhu.
I once did one where it was Grimace, Trump hugging Grimace. I got a pretty good result once.
In tactical glasses.
Cthulhu Trump.
Cthulhu. All right, now this is bad radio because we're just like...
Yeah, exactly. All right.
So I'll share it with you guys.
Patreon stuff, contact info. We got trade talks coming up. Capability Super Sounds 2 weeks, which is Hateful Eight. So it is the penultimate of the Tarantino movies to date. So check out Hateful Eight, and you can listen to Sal and myself and Will Pfeiffer talk about that movie at length.
I'll talk about punching women in the face, how it gave me fantasies of punching.
So bad. All right. So that's what I got. You guys?
Oh, wait. I got to show you this one.
You get it?
Yeah, we got a good one here. Hold on. How do I share it?
The bottom left one is unintentionally one of the greatest things ever.
Top right corner is impressive.
Oh yeah,
I like the middle one. It's got the good combination. I think
it has an appeal. Yeah,
definitely Trump, but definitely Cthulhu monster.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I like that one.
That's amazing. Huge fan.
What is that? I don't know what these are in here. It looks like little pictures in.
Yeah. In I think you need to save that.
I don't know how.
Is it the little, you know, pen? Yeah, there you go. All right. So what site is this?
I put it in the private chat.
Oh, okay.
Crayon.
Yeah, crayon.com.
Okay.
It's like the mini version of the Dali, because there's that larger, there's like the more intricate one that you can sign up and like it takes.
I mean, this
time.
One barely looks like any difference than the original.
Yeah.
Trump. I mean, that's just a picture of Trump, isn't it?
That's awesome.
Whoa.
All right, boys. We're going to continue to look at some Cthulhu Trumps here. But like I said, we'll be back ACTV this week. And then Around Comics next Thursday, our regularly scheduled 8 o'clock Central Standard Time, 8:15, somewhere around there. Thanks to Greg Porter for hanging out in the chat room. We'll be back then in the meantime.
In between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around
comics.
Give.